Buddha's birthday session, celebrating the birth of all Buddhas. Session, you may know, means to gather the mind or heart to embrace and sustain the mind. It's a retreat. When an army is in battle on the battlefield and they're starting to get overwhelmed, someone decides it's time to retreat, withdraw. It's temporarily, it's becoming too overwhelming on this battlefield, and we're losing our way. So, since the time of the Buddha, since before the time of Buddha, when people have felt that they are becoming somewhat overwhelmed by life, by the world, by the sometimes insanity of life in this world, they withdraw temporarily, they retreat to gather the troops together, embrace and sustain them, and take a little rest, gather some energy to go back and meet the full drama of life. I think it's a very natural thing. And sometimes it's spoken of as three kinds of retreat, like an outer, an inner, and an innermost retreat. So outer retreat is like all the things we set up to support sesshin, which are many, and it's quite wonderful that we have this form that we can tweak it a little bit here and there, but basically we do enough of them here that we're kind of used to it. It's quite beautiful for me to watch the very experienced Enos and everybody else come together, the Tenzo with great experience, and all the practitioners come together once again and set up the outer retreat, the container, the schedule, the guidelines, the boundaries. It really helps to set this stuff up. The silence, the intention, the forms creates the space to gather, embrace, and sustain the mind. One little tweak, this sesshin, looking at the schedule and thinking, what's really, you know, how can we support our practice? Just an experiment. It's a small one, really, but you can give your feedback at the end, for those who are especially sitting the whole thing, is in the afternoon there's a little bit longer rest period. The last sessions like this were, we would just have 4 40-minute zazen periods in a row, like all afternoon. And some people brought up that that's pretty intense. And I also felt like, that's pretty intense. And sometimes intensity is just right. And but it's, and I think that our sesshins come from this tradition, the Japanese Zen tradition, is I think this, you know, comparing to other traditions of Buddha Dharma, which I have practiced in, I have a sense that like the Japanese Zen tradition is largely based on intensity. It's part of the method, it's part of the skillful means. It's like you just make it like as intense as possible so that you have to just surrender. My teacher, Tenchin Roshi, once said when he was, I think when he was abbot of San Francisco Zen Center and would kind of design the session schedules, he said, I would, in my earlier years there, of in that role, I would basically design them around the very edge of what was humanly possible for me. And he's a pretty intense practitioner. It was maybe more than what was humanly possible for some others. And when I looked at some of those old sesshin schedules at Tassahara, I wondered if it was humanly possible. Starting the day at 3 o'clock or whatever, and sitting into the night late, late. Though that may be a skillful means, I wonder about it. I can see other skillful means that I think so much of our practice is about really just relaxing and opening in a very spacious kind of way. And sometimes too much of that kind of intensity is maybe actually pushes us in the wrong direction. It could. I think this depends largely on the personality of each participant. Anyway, this time we have 2 periods in the afternoon and then a little rest. Only half an hour. But that's, half an hour is quite different than 10 minutes of kinhin. And it's called a rest on the schedule. And then another 2 periods. So throughout the whole day, I think there's maybe 11 periods of zazen, but there's never more than 2 in a row. And I just find, personally, for my own rhythm, I really like that 2 periods. And then, you know, take a little break and then do another 2. You can get quite deeply into zazen, I think, in just 2 periods in a row anytime. Take a little rest and then another 2. And anyway, that afternoon half hour is a time that you can, some people have, their backs are the hardest part of sesshin. So I thought this is a time you could lie down on your back, or you could do qigong or yoga or fast walking around the park, or kinhin in the zendo just for longer, or zazen if you're into that kind of intensity. So, I think rest periods in general in sesshin are an interesting practice to stay with the mind gathering. It's easy to get dispersed because it's a little bit like the edges of the outer retreat are getting a little bit more fuzzy during rests. We're not necessarily doing everything together at that time. And another form of sesshin we have is dokusan. these one-on-one conversation meetings, and so as usual that will be offered. And let's say during the session, I'm intending to talk about some kind of like nuts and bolts zazen, really talk about meditation, you know, per se, this session. So so let's have Dokusan to stay focused, to help support our mind gathering. Let's have Dokusan be about zazen, or, you know, any experiences of session, as opposed to other stuff going on in our life outside of session. But that's valuable to talk about too, I think. But let's say during session, let's have, keep it like focused like that. And to support our practice of really like when we're retreating from that battlefield, it's kind of nice to just forget about that battlefield. It rages on outside all around us, but so that we can go meet it more fully afterwards, forget all about it as much as possible during this time. So all that's part of the outer retreat, the setup, the structure. I think we do pretty good with that. We're already doing pretty good. Feels different than a usual day at the Zen Center already. And then there's the inner retreat of gathering the mind. The Sishin guidelines say be upright, still, and awake. That's pretty good zazen instruction. Be upright, still, and awake. And we say Sishin is a time to discover anew, clarify, and actualize our deepest intention. We've been talking recently about bodhicitta, the sometimes called the deepest intention of a bodhisattva. So whether it's bodhicitta or some other deep intention, you can discover anew. That might be like the intention we've always had, but we've forgotten about because the battlefield is so horrendous that we're like so caught up in the battle we've forgotten our deepest intention. So as we retreat, we can discover it anew, or maybe we discover a different one, and then we can clarify and actualize it. I think of it was the first session I ever sat at San Francisco Zen Center, and I had a strong intention to be really present and still, and not get distracted. And I was doing okay with that, and I think after like a day or so, there was somebody in the session who had some kind of like energetic event happening. Some kind of like, I think it was like their internal, like their chi was getting like activated by Sashin. I think they had sat Sashin before, but it was like, and I've seen this happen somewhat with other people and heard about it too, and maybe it's related to Kundalini yoga. Sometimes they actually call it kriyas, that are like when your body starts shaking, when Kundalini starts to like arise and become released. She starts moving through your body in uncontrollable ways. I don't know what with this woman, but it was like these sort of spasms that were like very noticeable in the whole room. Like we'd be sitting really, really still, really, really quiet, and then all of a sudden, and it would come out her mouth too. I think uncontrollably, so much energy, and shake all around. Sometimes almost like without turning around, did she fall off her seat? All this movement and sudden, basically like the opposite of relaxation. And so I'm trying to be really settled, and it's like that kind of energy audibly and psychically when you become more and more still and open, I found was like so disturbing for me, and it became almost like, you know, my intention of this session is to become really still and quiet, and this is not helping. I think I even talked to practice leaders about, well, don't you think this is too much? Couldn't she just move out to the outer, you know, they have a kind of an outer zendo in San Francisco, the Daitan. Couldn't she sit out there? Because everybody else must be having the same problem. And they're like, well, we're all working with it, actually, because it's very obvious. And we've been talking about it, and, you know, we feel like so far we think it's good, best that you just stay here, try to practice with it. And then, you know, on like the, you know, last or next to last day of Sesshin, something like shifted for me. I think I was just getting more and more like tenderized by so much zazen. And the shift was that, suddenly like saw how I was having all this aversion towards this person, and that, you know, I was having a hard time, she must be really having a hard time. I mean, I don't know, but I imagined, you know, if I'm having a hard time settling, she's probably really having a hard time settling, and probably knows that everybody can hear her and is having trouble and wonders if she should leave or whatever. And I think it's probably harder for her than me. And all this compassion started just naturally arising in me, feeling like, I can't believe I was thinking of, like, get her out of here. It's, and she might have even, like, moved, maybe on her own or something on the last day. I think she might have, or left, or something happened. And as I recall, and I felt like, oh no, what happened? Where did she go? And it was all, and like, because my sitting now is just, you know, I'm sitting here for her and like opening my heart to her, and it was a different session. So I bring this up to say that our intention for session might change over the course of Sesshin. What was my deepest intention at the beginning was not my deepest intention at the end. So there's room for that. I don't think there's one fixed deepest intention. So it's not like we should discover our deepest intention on the first day and just maintain that. I think it's moment to moment to keep discovering anew our deepest intention, which maybe different the next minute than it was this minute, or we're not. We're just open to, you know, our true intention without trying to create it, discovering it. So maybe we could see bodhicitta as something that we don't so much create or generate as it is often spoken of. I think there's room for that for sure, but there's also, you could say, a way of looking at bodhicitta where we don't generate it, but we just discover our natural bodhicitta. and not maybe leads into what we could call the innermost retreat. If the inner retreat is settling body and mind in the present, and gathering the mind, and practicing Zazen more and more deeply and completely, we could say the innermost retreat is like when we actually discover the natural Zazen, or kind of like an effortless way that the mind is already at rest and always has been and always will be, and we open to that. Where it's not even really a practice at that point. The outer and the inner retreats are like very intentional practices of retreat, and this innermost, we could say, is like what's always been here. It's nothing to do, which is there all along. While we're working on the other two, here it is. And maybe Zen tends to emphasize that ultimate, innermost, natural being. But I think to really discover that more and more fully and deeply, then the other two, the outer and inner retreats, are totally essential. There's like the clarification effort and intention to cultivate practice is, has always been the necessary provisions for this opening. So there's some people who've done a lot of sesshins here, and so on, or if you haven't done sesshin here, and I wonder before going on where you're at with it. Like, how do you, what's your intention? Is it just because, like the Enos might say, well, we're the Enos, so, and it's a kind of a small sesshin, there was nobody else to be Eno, so we're, of course we'll do it. That's our role. I could even feel that way, right? It's like, here it comes on the calendar, of course I have to go to sesshin. It's my role. Actually, it's kind of nice to not have to think about it too much if we're used to doing it, just step into it. But it's kind of nice, I find, for myself, even though if I couldn't remember why, I'd still be doing it. I want to stop and remember. Like, it's not just because it's my role. We have a lot of sesshins here that I kind of put on the calendar and people went along with it. I feel like, and like, what was that all about? Why? And I'm kind of curious if you all have anything to say about, for those doing this sesshin, or even for those just coming in for part of it now, what would you say is like, where is that coming from, if you can tell? Like, we might say intention, or what do you want to do this week? Or not do? Yeah.
Service. I know it's
The fear of the schedule. Yeah, that's beautiful. I can feel that intention arising to like, oh, I kind of, especially you see, oh, I was involved there and I had this chance and I maybe didn't take the full advantage of it that I would have liked to. And now I have another chance. And like, let's see how, almost, it's a very natural thing. So that's beautiful expression. Yeah. So what in particular, so you say to be of service? And how do you think Sashin will help be more benefit to others? So it sounds like with a lot of zazen, you can really get more familiar with your mind, gathering the mind, and see your intentions and attachments and aversions more clearly with more, because we get to see them in zazen, and maybe there's some sense that, well, if there's more zazen, maybe I'll get to see them more clearly, which I think is true, actually. Yeah, so that makes sense. Great. Anyone else? Yes. A little part of the maybe from, you know, something, you know. Maybe from past experience with lots of sesshins, there's maybe less and less, it has to be less and less, you know, here's the reasons, and more like an intuitive sense, like, I know, there's something about that, that I just, of course. And both not being able to say exactly why, but being drawn into it, a nice way of putting it, and then, and something about how, about the that commitment to something that's hard to maybe even say what it is.
Right.
Yeah.
It's kind of like I'm not deciding to do something, but I'm pulling
you. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm. And you're letting it. Coming to Sesshin is let it. Okay, Zazen, you can take me to Sesshin again. You're awake. You're speaking. You're alive. Yeah. Yeah, maybe. Thank you. Anyone else? Yes. That's great. Yeah, I've heard the Dalai Lama say something like, when asked, you know, what is like Buddhism really? What is like the essence of Buddha Dharma? And he's probably given different answers. You know, I think one classic one is, it's basically just not harming others, and benefiting others as much as possible. And he's like, and if it seems like benefiting others as much as possible is too much, at least just not harming others. Something like that. Yeah. I said, well, what's that have to do with sesshin? But it could have some sense. I think Mitchell expressed, you know, made a connection there. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Somehow that makes me feel
Yeah.
You feel supported by other people. You see other people struggle, and then you can let go of your own struggle. That's kind of what you were seeing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It seemed like, at first it seemed like it wasn't helping my zazen to sit with others, but in the end it was. Yeah. And there's, you know, I think there's room for both, but that is a somewhat unique emphasis anyway in the Zen tradition, is sitting with others and a lot with others. And I think, in America, other Buddhist traditions do that now, but I think it's largely influenced by Zen, actually. Both Theravada and Tibetan Buddhism, I think most traditionally, you do most meditation alone. Even if you're in a monastery, you go off to your own room to meditate. So, and I think this together thing has various aspects, but as people have been mentioning, I think it's closely connected with this, like, for others and with others, and compassion and kindness are just so much more upfront when we're doing it all together. We have all these opportunities of interaction, and we're remembering that we're always with others when we're actually sitting with others. So we have the outer retreat is kind of like, we might say, just follow the schedule. Sometimes they say there's that instruction, even at like a Tassajara practice period, they say, if you can just follow the schedule and all the forms and everything completely, that's just do that, because that's a lot, actually. But in a way, you could say that's just talking about the outer retreat. And maybe the implication is if you just do the outer retreat really completely, the inner retreat will take care of itself. And maybe the innermost one will be revealed too. And it's maybe true. And at the same time, I feel an intention to, like, when there's time to speak each day, which is not that much time, to speak about the particulars of the inner retreat. What is this zazen practice that we've all been doing for some time already? We have our own sense, but like, maybe helpful to really, there's so much of it, right? Think about 50 periods this week or more. 55, 54, almost 40-minute periods. Like, that's a lot of time to spend sitting on a cushion, right? So the more, at least I often feel like, let's really, like, clarify what we're doing. In some ways, we could say, if you sit long enough, that's one theory, if you sit long enough, everything will be revealed. I think Thoreau, maybe in Walden, said something like, I discovered something from my retreat to Walden Pond there, is that if you, apparently he would spend a lot of time just like going into a place in the woods and just sitting there quietly, maybe no particular posture, but sit there and watch and be open. And he said, I discovered this in my retreat, that if you sit still in one place for long enough, that everything will be revealed to you. Basically, the world will, lots of stuff will happen all around you. And I think you were talking about, you really get to know the trees and the birds and the squirrels and all that. But maybe also the inner world. So that may be true if we sit long enough. Everything will be revealed to us. And looking back on my own Zen practice path, I feel like, I don't know, maybe it's too strong to say waste, but I'm willing to say it for now. I kind of feel like, looking back, I wasted a lot of time sitting on a cushion over many, many years of doing that. I would say maybe not complete waste, actually, because it all led up to this moment right now, which is a wonderful moment. So I don't want to deprecate any period of zazen, really. And yet, there were many things I feel like I didn't, that weren't clear to me and were never pointed out. Maybe it's part of the Zen style is to not point too much out, so we discover on our own. But looking back, as I say, I feel like there was a lot of time I would just be like, okay, get periods over, sit down again. Okay, dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum. Okay, another one for like a few thousand. Not that nothing was happening there, but I could have, as I've learned more and partly through hearing instructions, actually, has really influenced me a lot. Hearing more specific instructions has really changed my zazen. So maybe I can offer some things that I've heard that have been helpful to me. Well, briefly for now, some things to think about in the inner retreat of zazen. These three aspects I think are really nice to look at, to kind of assess a little bit during our zazen time is, attention, like present, being present and aware and attentive and mindful. Those are all just one category. And particularly, I find more and more it's helpful to like be clear on our intention of what we're actually focusing on. I think this is, for my own practice, I think this has been a lot of my wasted time. Is like, well, we'll just sit and just kind of in the name of just sitting or something, we'll just be here. But I'm not really like clear where the mind is being directed. Because I would propose that meditation is all about attending to something quite specific with some intention. Attending with some intention, I'd say, up to a certain point, and then there are practices and realizations that are have gone beyond specific intention, and they're really just and no particular object of focus too. But to actually to jump right into that, to just say, okay, I just boom, no intention, totally nothing happening. I don't know, maybe for some people it comes easier, but I feel like some practices that like get us ready, that are like actually training the mind and body to be able to just be clearly awake and free with no grasping and no duality and no suffering and total open-heartedness. I think to just say, just be that way right now is like maybe possible. And maybe there's something to be said in the Zen style is kind of sometimes implies that just be that way right now. No methods leading to that because that's extra. But realistically speaking, I think it's quite almost impossible. Maybe if you've been practicing a really, really long time, but with methods. So, so the inner retreat is like meditation methods, and the innermost retreat is methodless. But we have three retreats going on. We know that we're into taking care of the outer one, and the forms and schedule and so on. And we love the innermost one. Maybe that's what's actually drawing us here. But I would propose, let's really take care of the inner one. That's like the one in between. That's what are we doing? So this one aspect is attention, mindfulness. What is our object? So I would propose right up to the innermost retreat, there's an object. Even if it's like just whatever's happening in the present, I call that an object. As the present experience, the experience of the five or six senses all open, just being with that, still that's the object of attention. It's quite specific, even though it's wide. It's a wide object. So being clear, and you know, it's up to all of us to kind of decide moment to moment what object, and we can shift. I shift often, but I try these days. I'm really trying to be clear, like this period, or even during the period, okay to shift. But if we shift, to shift really intentionally, like I'm really focusing on the breath. I'm following the breath, counting the breath. That's an obvious object, and that's my intention. And if it starts to be, I feel like I'm getting bored with that now. Let's just rest. Like, well, okay, maybe, but let's do that very intentionally. And not just because I'm bored, because I feel like I'm gonna shift the object now from the breath to a wider object. But it's still an object here. I think if it's just rest and not do anything, and that very easily turns into like a kind of a dullness that's kind of like comfortable in a way, but it's not, I feel like for me it's not so helpful. I spend a lot of time doing this, I confess. Like the breath is an object, if you want to widen that. Breath is good because it's very grounding. If we're not so settled and scattered, I think the breath may be the best. I like it. It's very specific. We don't get into this thing. Well, I'm not sure about the object. It's kind of like it's so vast that it's kind of disappeared. And then if we feel very settled and grounded and sashin, we can start to maybe get to some of these spaces where we're not thinking about the battlefield so much. We're just, the wandering mind is going less and less astray. Then another object would be like, not just a specific one focus of the breath, but like the sounds, the sights, the smells, the bodily sensations arising and ceasing. There's many other objects too, but those are two common ones that I think are nice to be clear which one. And then, so that's all in this, of these three aspects, that's all like the mindfulness or attention to something. It's a little bit dualistic, but I think it's very helpful to just say, just suddenly just be in non-duality. Maybe, but maybe by the last days of sashin, if we've been sitting the whole week, it depends, I think, on the person. I find I kind of need to like do some practical warm-up exercises. Yeah. Oh, well, let me just briefly just finish. that's one thing, is this attention, and very briefly, the other aspects of these three are relaxation. I really feel like body and mind really, really relaxed is super important. And ironically, I feel like it seems to be true, and I've heard this teaching elsewhere, that if the mind's getting this kind of like, if we're pretty settled and the mind's wandering off a little bit, instead of like becoming more tense and like, come on, bring it back, rouse some tension, to actually relax more deeply sometimes, that actually helps. Because I think it's this inner tension that actually is pulling the mind away. So relax, and then the third one kind of balances out so that relax doesn't become just fall asleep. The third is like alertness, kind of vivid, clear alertness, clarity. And it, you know, might sound, to a non-meditator that could sound like a contradiction, to be really relaxed and really, really alert at the same time. But that's when it's really when the inner retreat is really working most, flowing most freely, I feel like. Those two, about really relaxed, really alert, and the context of this relaxation and alertness is actually focused, knowing what we're actually focused on. So those three, I think, are a nice model that you can check during your zazen, how those three are going. Yeah. Well, partly the form is what keeps you relax within the form. So we have a specific posture, very upright posture. It's kind of like an attentive posture. And we say relax doesn't mean this. It means within this upright posture. And there is a kind of way that the body actually does settle a little bit when we relax. But it doesn't, it's still upright. Relaxed and upright. To do sashimi.
I just worry, in a sense, I can't get that. For me, I can get it.
But some can.
Some.
Here we are.
Well.
And some are doing parts. And, And in fact, less people can do that, right? So that's a benefit of something like this, is that it's more available to more people. So those are all good points, and in some ways you could say this is more advanced practice, what we're doing here. Because of that, like, it's not as much, the outer retreat is not, I'd say it's very supportive, but in those settings, if you're doing it for years, out in the mountains, it's even more supportive. So in a way, we might, if we're making the effort to do it in this setting and deepen it, and maybe actually we're developing, could be we develop faster or more thoroughly because of these challenges. Could be that, and then people who are in the mountains for years and come out are like, whoa, even to just like, you know, going to Jamesburg from Tassajara is already like a battle scene. I'm not gonna forget San Francisco or Santa Cruz. But so we're already, because we're used to the battle scene.
Now this is hard. You know, I truly see it that way. You know, just the setup of being this out in the world like this.
It's pretty, you know.
It's hard for people to make the room to do it. It's kind of
Well, I think we do pretty good with the container, given the circumstances, and it's available, like, for people who can. And, you know, I questioned it, like, this machine, I think, is maybe the smallest number of people doing the whole thing that we've had in a while. Maybe just four. And actually, the Shuso is sick right now. So, she's just sick, as she would be doing. So, maybe only three of us, huh? Actually doing a whole, and I think, and I, you know, that's a question, because I heard that in former times at the Zen Center, that the abbess would say, there were times when I think she said, you do the whole session, were you around there? Yeah. So, and then maybe we'd have, then maybe only three people would ever be in the room. Or maybe some people would be like, I really want to do it, and so if I can only do the whole thing, then I will. Maybe it's more encouragement. I don't know.
Something about what the Buddha is saying is about who seems like this is crazy. You know, you've had all these years of creating life to this unwholesome relationship with life. Completely different. Just on a relative level, but the more I can sit down and especially in an extended way, that I don't miss that mess. You know, then while I double communicate just one more or benefit or do it my mom or help a person in the area, whatever it is, I'm so much more able to be present.
Because of your practice. Mm-hmm.
So there's that's kind of to me, you know, the deeper intention, and then often, like, for this machine, a different intention has to do with how I can stay present and kind of more like how I'm gonna sit, but that's more addressing the middle.
The inner, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They all work together. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I like how you say, we just offer it, and you know, we're a non-proselytizing religion. It's beautiful, right? So it's like the Buddha too is like just sat, and people came to him, and eventually this huge thing grew. Didn't seem like he was even trying exactly. And Suzuki Roshi, apparently the same thing at Sokoji. People were like, well, here you have the Zen thing, and like, what's that all about? Can we do it? And he's like, well, I sit at 5:45 every morning, and you can join me if you like. And there it was. He's like, he didn't even try to start San Francisco Zen Center. He's just doing his thing and offering it, and people came. And so I think that's the main thing. And to be like, if we see the value in it, then like it doesn't even matter so much if people come or not. It's almost like we just want to be doing it, and it's what a wonderful gift. And like, wow, people don't know what we might feel. People don't know what they're missing. But that's I think it's an unusual thing too, right? Zen practice, like the people who, there will always be just a few people who are drawn to it and find it. It's kind of a strange thing.
Well, let me really clarify, because I'm not saying what this is, but I just feel like it's so great. And I think it's really 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 great. You know, completely, you know, whatever. And in that sense, I'm sure to be happy with this room, or any two of us, or, you know, maybe we'll make it just me, like, just sitting here and being here. So, I mean, it's not something, it's just not an operation of the difficulty of making this available to people who I wish.
Yeah. And that's partly why I ask, you know, I'm curious about people's, why people come to Sashin, because, you know, what is that? And maybe at Tassahara or something, I wouldn't be as curious. I would think it would be maybe more unified, because it's like, yeah, here it is more like in the midst of a busy life, what is it that draws us in back and forth like that? And therefore, what's the practice that most supports people's different intentions? Yes. So it's different for different people. Totally. Yeah. Body, mind, and breath all like completely interdependent and all affect each other. Yeah, if the body is not relaxed, the mind can help relax it. If the mind's not relaxed, the body can help relax it. Completely Zazen is so integrated in that way, like Tai Chi. A needle in a ball of yarn. So let's sit some more. You wouldn't want to miss a period. May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.